About 43 years ago, summer of 1980, I was in Orange, Louisiana. And this is the first inspiration on this scripture I had, that I remember anyway. And I thought, well, the Lord give me a message before long, but he never did. I thought on it down through the years, different times. Sometimes maybe some inspiration, think, well, the Lord's going to give me a message, but he never did. But he's given me one now. This could be, in some ways, one of the most serious messages I've ever preached in my life. So that's why I'm pleading for prayer tonight, because it's extremely serious to all of us, not just one or two or half a house full. It's serious to all of us. Let's go to Genesis. Genesis, we're going to open 6th chapter, first verse. Came to pass, when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, the daughters were born unto men. The sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were fair, and they took them wives of all that they chose. And the Lord said, my spirit shall not always strive with man. For he that is also flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. Now there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, they became mighty men, which were of old men of renown. And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Repented the Lord that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. The Lord said, I will destroy man, whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man, beast, creeping thing, fowls of the air. For it repented me that I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. My text is the third verse. It said, and the Lord said, my spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he also is flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. My spirit shall not always strive with man. This is extremely serious for the bottom line and the baseline that if God don't work with you and I, we'll never make heaven. He's got to give us a call. He's got to work with us. He's got to convict us and stir us and shake us. We will never get anywhere with the Lord unless we respond to that call. And the Lord has given calls over and over and over down through the years. But he doesn't always strive with man all the way to the end of his life. There is people that have died that I'd say maybe the Lord had quit striving them several years before they died. They didn't have a chance to make heaven. I know of cases where that God completely backed off from men, and they would stand, one of them I'm thinking of, and he would stand and he would cry, and he would beg the people during a revival meeting to go to the altar. He said, the Spirit has left me. He's not dealing with me. I have no hope of heaven. I'm headed for hell. That would be a bad state to be in. But you know that has happened down through the years? And it could happen to some of us right here in this building. That's why I'm so stirred and burdened tonight, for the fact that God, at any time, with anybody, can back off and never deal with them again. Leave them alone, not strive with them, to make efforts to get them saved, to use exertion, to endeavor with the earnestness, to labor hard. Listen, God spends time calling and working, convicting and stirring. Listen, we're going to have convictions. Even though we get saved, the Lord is going to convict us and work with us and help to enlighten us and work with us all down through the years of our life. But the bottom line is we got to respond to all those calls, all those convictions, all that. And he wants to help us to get there because he wants us to be deeper. He wants us to be wiser, and he wants us to be better saints, if I can say it that way. So he said there, the Lord said. Now this isn't my saying. This is God saying, my spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he is also flesh. Listen, we've got to remember who we are. That's the problem. Sometimes we get to thinking we're something that we're not. But the bottom line is we're flesh and blood. We could die at any time. We can be killed at any time. We can be destroyed at any time. We don't have a promise of tomorrow. We don't even have a promise for the rest of this evening. We can die any time in any way. And all the things that can take us out of here, we ought to tremble in our boots. We're flesh and blood. Flesh and blood. For he also is flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. Let's go to 2 Peter 2 and 5 to tie into this. Again, we're going to deal with Noah. I have, by the help of the Lord, three different areas in the Old Testament that I want to deal with. And this is going to be the opening area right here. It said he spared not the old world, but saved Noah, the eighth preacher, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood upon the world of the ungodly. Now spared not the old world, but he saved Noah, the eighth person, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood upon the world of the ungodly. Hebrews 11 and 7 has another one scripture here. It said, by faith Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house, by the which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is by faith. So it said, by faith Noah. Said he was a preacher of righteousness. Tonight, God used Noah for years and years. Listen, Noah responded to the warning. There had never been a flood, but out of all those people, God chose Noah because Noah had a heart, I would say, that could be touched, that could be worked with, that could be dealt with, and Noah was the one that God called and dealt with, and he responded to that. He moved with fear, and he prepared an ark. How many of you have ever been to the Ark Encounter? How many of you have seen that? They say it is built as close exactly the way it was back then. It's an awesome ship. It actually awed and begot me. The timbers that's inside, the way that was built, the things that was done. Now then, I don't know exactly all about that, but the bottom line is I know that Noah was spared because he built a boat. And as he was building that boat, as he was working on it, I can see him preaching to the people back there and warning them there's going to be a flood. Now somebody said, well, there'd never been a flood. Listen, folks, there's never been hellfire and brimstone burn up this earth neither, but there will be a judgment. There will be a judgment one day. And my mama said many times, she said, son, I've heard that preached all of my life, that there's going to be a judgment. Said it's never come, but that don't mean it won't come, because the Bible said there's going to be a judgment. Listen, Noah was telling them that there's going to be a flood, and they couldn't fathom in their mind. And I would say, God, between Noah and God, he was dealing, he was working, because it helped them to see that there was going to be destruction, and yet they turned it down over and over and over. I had a children's book. Matter of fact, I guess I still got them. I want to give them to my grandgirls. And in this children's book, there's a page there, and it shows the ark. And right over here, it shows the animals coming. And there's a man standing here, and he's looking. And you can see the expression on his face of pure horror. In other words, Noah told them, he warned them, they turned it down, but now then something's happening. Not just anything, there's a boat, there's a door opening, and here comes the animals. One after another. Listen, folks, tonight, we can wait 1 second too long. 1 second could be an eternity for you and I the wrong way. The Lord wants us to respond now. Listen, how many times has God dealt with you over the last year? Over the last 2 years or 3 years? Maybe you're 35 or 40 years old. How many times has God talked to you and worked with you and convicted you and stirred you? The Lord wants us to respond to his calls. He gave his life. He done everything that he had to do to make a perfect plan for you and I to go to heaven. And yet we keep turning him down over and over and over. 120 years. Quite a long time, isn't it? God's mercy for 120 years. How many years is he going to give you? 10 years? 15? 20? 25? There's young people in here that the Lord has called and you've responded. Thank the Lord. I started at 18 and I've never regretted it. It's been quite a journey, so to speak. But tonight, the Lord wants you and I to respond. Noah's seen something that other people don't see. Listen, as God's dealing with us, we're able to see something that maybe some others hadn't seen yet, and that is the call. Come unto me, all ye that labor are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I'm meek and lowly in heart. You shall find rest in your soul. The Lord is wanting you to respond to the come. Mama used to call supper time. How many of you jumped to it? Because Mama had good food in there. It was time to eat. You were hungry. There's good food. This whole Bible is full of good things. The whole life with Christ is full of great things. You and I can have something that a lot of the people of the world don't have. And we can be happy, redeemed, and free. But we won't have it unless we respond to that call. But my spirit shall not always strive. There's going to be many, many times down through the year that the Lord has dealt with people and called people and helped them to see, and yet they've turned it down. My grandfather was dealing with two men. About the same time, if I understood Mama correct, he was working with them and they was interested in getting saved. But they kept rejecting it and rejecting it. One day, one of them pulled up in front of Grandpa's house. He had acid in a bottle, and he drank that acid and died right there. The other one come to Grandpa's place, got out and had a knife, and went down so far and slit his throat and run down through the woods bleeding to death. They wouldn't hear to the good things of God. Listen, you think, well, that's kind of hard, Brother Carl. Listen, how many times did that happen? How many times have people been dealt with and called by the Spirit of God, and they rejected it and rejected it and rejected it, and finally Jesus had backed off, and it's nothing but pure darkness. And they kill themselves. Tonight, don't turn him down. I beg you, don't turn him down. 120 years. How many times has he called after you? How many times has he called after you in this meeting? Has he given you another chance? Listen, folks, this is Christ. This is not me or Brother Marty or Brother Ed. This is you and God. This is the dealings of the Spirit with you tonight, helping you to see there's a better way, helping you to see that there's life and peace and joy above all other things. Praise God. If you're not saved tonight, why are you not saved? What are you turning it down for? Why are you rejecting it? What is it out there that means more to you than heaven? What is there in your life that's good enough to take you to hell? I've been thinking on this a lot. Preached on some of it in Holly Hill. The bottom line is, listen, there is nothing that comes close to a living a life of peace and joy and happiness and redemption in the things of God. It's far beyond anything I know of. Oh, tonight, how many times has he dealt with you? How many times? How many more times will he deal with you? How much longer will he give you a chance? Oh, but I got time, do you? I want you to listen to me tonight. I'm sitting there, and Molly's sitting to my right and my left, and I was sitting there, and the burden was so heavy, I just busted out in tears. Because, folks, this thing is serious tonight. God don't have to deal with you one more second. He doesn't have to call after you any more time. These meetings are held to the glory of God and the good of souls. And he's wanting you to respond, to move tonight to his biddings. Oh, are we responding to all of his convictions tonight? Young people, are you moving to the biddings of the Spirit? To his biddings. I've seen a few things in my life. I've seen people that have walked away. I've seen people that have backslid. I've seen people that possibly went out into eternity totally lost. There was a young man in Guthrie many, many years ago, right about the end of the Guthrie camp meeting. And he was there, and he was under conviction. He was literally trembling that night. My brother knew he was in trouble. And the man turned to go out, young man did, and my brother followed him. And he begged him, and he pled with him, but he wouldn't move. He wouldn't come back in. He wouldn't get saved. Well, went along about 1 week, and God was still dealing with him. I believe he talked to Brother Leslie, if I'm not mistaken. And God kept working. Another week, then we got the call that he had drowned in a whirlpool in a Cottonwood Creek. Drowned. All of a sudden he went swimming, got caught up in that, and he was gone. That won't happen to me. Might not, but you could be killed in a car wreck real quickly. Oh, tonight, Lord help us. God is trying to redeem and get every soul that he can tonight to live for him. That's his business. That's his call. All right, let's go to Genesis, the 13th chapter. I want to talk about Sodom and Gomorrah some tonight. 13th chapter in the 12th and 13th verse to start with. And Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, pitched his tent toward Sodom. Now Lot pitched his tent toward Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. Exceedingly. Not just normal sinners, they were exceeding. Let's go to Romans, the first chapter. Romans, the first chapter. And about the 16th verse, he says, "For I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For therein is the righteousness of God revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith. But the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness. Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shewed it unto them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing them to be wise, they became fools. They changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image like to corruptible man, and to birds, and to four-footed beasts, and creeping things. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through their lust of their own hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie, who worshiped and served the creature more than Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this God gave them up into foul affection, for even their women did change the natural use of that which is against nature. And likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their own lust, in their lust one toward another, men with men, working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error which was meet. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind, to do those things which are not convenient, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whispers, backbiters, hating of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventor of evil things, disobedience to parents, without understanding, covet breakers, without natural affection, implacable and unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them." All right, let's go to Genesis 19. Genesis 19. Back that away. I want to read this. I'll get them read, then I'll comment on them. Genesis 19, we'll start at 12. Genesis 19 and 12. And the men said unto Lot, hast thou here any besides son-in-law and thy sons and thy daughters and whatsoever hast thou in the city? Bring them out of this place. Now, there's two angels, I believe it is, has gone into Sodom, and Lot has been protecting them and working with them and taking care of them. And they're there because of the cry that had rose up to God, and God had come to the place where he was tired of striving and working, and he was fixing to send judgment. So here they are. Lot has kept them and protected them as much as he could through the night. And it said, men said unto Lot, hast thou here any besides sons-in-law, sons and daughters, and thy daughters, and whosoever, whatsoever thou hast in this city, bring them out of this place, for we will destroy this place. Because the cry of them is waxen great before the face of the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it. Lot went out and spake unto his sons-in-law, which married his daughters, and said, up, get thee out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city. But he seemed as one that mocked unto his sons-in-law. And when the morning arose, and the angels hastened Lot, saying, arise, take thy wife and thy two daughters, which are here, lest thou be consumed in the iniquity of the city. And while he lingered, the men laid hold upon his hand, and upon the hand of his wife, and upon the hand of two daughters, and the Lord being merciful unto them. And they brought them forth and set them without the city. And it came to pass, when they had brought them forth abroad, that he said, escape for thy life. Look not behind thee, neither stay thou in the plain. Escape to the mountain, lest thou be consumed. And Lot said unto them, oh, not so, my Lord. Behold, now the servant hath found grace in thy sight, has magnified thy mercy, which thou hast shewed unto me in saving thy life, my life. And I cannot escape to the mountain, lest some evil take me and I die. Behold, now this city is near to flee unto, and it is a little one. Oh, let me escape thither. Is it not a little one? And my soul shall live. And he said to him, see, I've accepted thee concerning this thing also, that I will not overthrow this city for that which thou hast spoken. Haste thee, escape thither, for I cannot do anything till thou come thither. Therefore the name of this city called Zoar. The sun was risen upon the earth when Lot entered into Zoar. Then the Lord rained upon Sodom and on Gomorrah, brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he overthrew those cities and all the plain, and all the inhabitants of the city, that which grew up on the ground. But his wife looked back from behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. Abraham got up early in the morning to the place where he stood before the Lord, and he looked toward Sodom and Gomorrah, toward all the land of the plain, and beheld, and lo, the smoke of the country went up as a smoke of a furnace. Do you believe this, what this reading is? Do you believe God destroyed these places? Abraham pleaded for mercy. Started out, I believe, with 50 people. If there's 50 righteous people in there, will you spare the city? Yeah, I'll spare it for 50 people. And he kept going down to about 10, I believe it was. And he said, if there's 10 righteous here, will you spare the city? Yes, I will. I guess there wasn't 10 in there. There wasn't, because there's only, what, 4 escaped. And the judgment. Now, I could be wrong, but I don't think I'm too far off. The bottom line is that God strove and dealt with these people for a number of years trying to help them, and they didn't get better, but they waxed worse. Listen, folks, let me tell you, there's a lot of spirits in the world today. There's hundreds, thousands of spirits out there. I say thousands, numbers of them. And people are being devil-possessed, spirit-possessed by these different spirits. And at the rate that it's going right now, it has gotten so rampant that it ought to scare every one of us in here. It ought to stir us that those spirits are there by the numbers. One time I heard about a deal. Two people I knew, didn't know them real well, but I knew them, knew who they were. And I heard that they had got involved in homosexuality. And finally I found out for sure that they were. And I literally walked out of the house that I was cleaning, went out to my van or my car, whatever I drive, my van I believe it was, and went out there to get something, and I like to throw up. It made me so sick to think that these two people that I know had respect for, had lowered themselves down to do this kind of thing. But they did. Listen, folks, Brother Dan has told me and Brother Philip that there is one or two malls in the town of Atlanta, Georgia, that there's about one or two times a year that the homosexuals move in and totally take over that whole mall. It's full of that. Number of years ago, back about somewhere about 1989, 1990, I was Pastor Guthrie at the time. My daddy had a nephew. He had died. So Mama called me and she said, "We'd like you and Rebecca to go to the funeral. Are you going?" "No." I thought that was odd, and I still think it's odd that my dad wouldn't go to his nephew's funeral when he had the chance to go, but he wanted me to go. Well, we talked about it and we went. We walked in there and it wasn't very long. We hadn't even got to where the pews was. And we got there and we felt something between the two of us, and we looked at one another and we said, "Something is not right in here." What he had done is he had gone from being a youth minister in the Baptist church that he had got involved in homosexuality, and he had died of AIDS. And that place was full of homosexuals. I don't know how many. I don't even remember how large a funeral it was. It wasn't huge. I don't remember. But he died of that. And that spirit in my spirit was repelling. And that is real tonight. There is a homosexual spirit that people get and gets them in such a state. Listen tonight. There is spirits that if you and I reject things and reject things and reject things and turn away the power of God, we can be possessed with a spirit too. You can be possessed with it. And I'm not saying a homosexual spirit particularly, but there's all kinds of spirits out there that people can get and be possessed with them. If God would pull it back and let us look at it, I guarantee you every one of us would be shocked beyond measure tonight of what's really out there. I come to the conclusion real quick. It's very, very real. I've not had too much dealings with it point blank in my ministry. But the bottom line is this, folks. Homosexuality is rampant in our country today. All this transgender stuff and all this homosexuals is all one thing. I didn't know that for a while. But as I read and studied on it some, it let it be known that they're one and the same thing. And I thought, well, okay, that kind of explains things a little bit. Listen, it is rampant in our country. A young lady many years ago, back in the 1980s, early 80s, we were in their place having a meeting, and Brother Egbert and I was there, and we were standing in the home with the minister, and he had several children. One of those had some daughters also, and one of the daughters come in there one morning, and she said, "I want to move to San Francisco." I said, "You want to do what?" "I want to move to San Francisco." Now, San Francisco was bad back then. What do you think it is today? It's horrible. And she said, "I want to live there. I want to work there." I said, "What do you want to do that for?" Well, I don't remember the answer she gave me now. But the bottom line was, she's interested. I said, "That'd be the last place I'd want to live. Now, I'll go hold a meeting there. I'll do things there by the grace of God. But I'm not interested in living in a place that's full of homosexuality. Full of it. And that was then. And now then it has got so rampant in so many places. They're having pride deals all through the month of June in different cities across this country. They've gotten so brazen that they're having parades and gatherings and I don't know what all to lift that thing up. We're proud of what we are. Listen, folks, those people are going to end up in a devil's hell is where they're going to live and land. For the bottom line is, that is not of God. God made it to be a man and a woman, not two men or two women. And the very fact that he's destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah then, I can't see that right there alone. The Lord gave me a message several years ago when I was at Shawnee, preached about 4 to 5 hours on that subject. When I began to look into it and God began to deal, I've never had a message go together any quicker and any easier than that one that I did at that time. And I preached on it and preached on it. I started in Genesis. I went all the way to Revelation and laid it out. Listen, there's a very definite cause in the Word of God that homosexuals are going to hell. Now that's pretty strong. If you don't believe me, look at the Bible. He destroyed two cities before it. Listen, how many others have died and gone out in eternity lost because they got involved with that spirit? You and I better be very careful that we don't get involved or do, well, let's say, let's don't reject God's strivings. God's strivings tonight with us, no matter what it is, we need to move forward and do what God would ask us to do. Their spirit is out there and they'd like to be involved in you. All right, let's go back. One other point. Let's go back to Romans. Romans in the 28th verse, 1 and 28 of Romans. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient. Now, there's more than one angle on this word reprobate, but one of it is flat out its meanings abandon. Abandon in sin. In other words, God just turned them loose. Let them go. How would you like to have God just turn you loose, not strive with you anymore, not call, not convict, not stir, just allow you to wander in the darkness of your mind and your soul because God has quit dealing with you and he's abandoned you in the depths of sin. There's a lot of people out there that is reprobate. They can't do things like they once did. Over to a reprobate mind. Oh, tonight, Lord, help us to be very, very careful because God is working and you and I can get ourselves into real trouble if we do not follow the things of God. All right, let's go to Exodus and finish up. On Exodus 7 and 1. Exodus 7 and 1. Ever heard of the man named Pharaoh? What happened to Pharaoh? What happened to his army? 7 and 1 of Exodus says, the Lord said unto Moses, see, I made thee a rod, a god to Pharaoh, and Aaron thy brother shall be thy prophet. Thou shalt speak all that I command thee, and Aaron thy brother shall speak unto Pharaoh, and he send the children of Israel out of his land. And I'll harden Pharaoh's heart, and I'll multiply my signs and my wonders in the land of Egypt. But Pharaoh shall not hearken unto you, that I may lay my hand upon Egypt and bring forth mine armies and my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Egypt by great judgments. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I stretch forth my hand upon Egypt and bring out the children of Israel from among them. And Moses and Aaron did as the Lord commanded them, so did they. And Moses was 80 years old, and Aaron 83 years old, when they spake unto Pharaoh. All right, the 13th verse of this chapter, it says, and he hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he hearkened not unto them as the Lord had said. All right, let's move to the 8th chapter of Exodus, the first verse. And it said, and the Lord spake unto Moses, go unto Pharaoh, and say unto him, thus saith the Lord, let my people go, that they may serve me. And if thou refuse to let them go, behold, I'll smite all thy border with frogs. And the river shall bring forth frogs abundantly, which shall go up and come into thy house, and into thy bedchamber, and into thy bed, and into the house of thy servants, and upon thy people, and into thine ovens, and into thy kneading troughs. And the frogs shall come up both on thee, and upon thy people, and upon all thy servants. The Lord spake unto Moses, say unto Aaron, stretch forth thy hand with thy rod over the streams, and over the rivers, and over the ponds, and cause frogs to come up upon the land of Egypt. And Aaron stretched out his hand over the waters of Egypt, and the frogs came up and covered the land of Egypt. And the magicians did so with their enchantments and brought up frogs upon the land of Egypt. But then Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron and said, entreat the Lord that he may take away the frogs from me and from my people, and I will let the people go, that they may sacrifice unto the Lord. And Moses said unto Pharaoh, glory over me. When shall I entreat for thee and for thy servants and for thy people and destroy the frogs from thee and thy houses, that they may remain in the river only? And he said, tomorrow. And he said, be it according to thy word, that thou mayest know that there is none like unto the Lord our God. And the frogs shall depart from thee, and from thy houses, and from thy servants, and from thy people, shall remain in the river only. And Moses and Aaron went out from Pharaoh, and Moses cried unto the Lord because of the frogs which he had brought, against Pharaoh. And the Lord did according to the word of Moses. The frogs died out of the houses, and out of the villages, and out of the fields. Oh, tonight. 15th verse said, but when Pharaoh saw that there was respite, he hardened his heart and hearkened not unto them as the Lord had said. All right, now let's go to the 14th chapter of Exodus. Now, God worked with Pharaoh. He done some of the most miraculous miracles that's ever been done anywhere in the world. He worked and he worked and he worked. And Pharaoh kept getting harder and harder and harder. God said, I'm going to harden his heart. Pharaoh hardened his own heart. He wouldn't yield. And in one statement, I believe right here, in which I'm fixing to read, the bottom line was, they have left. He asked that the Israelites had left. Yeah, they've left. We must go get them because they serve us. They serve us. Oh, tonight, all those miracles, all those workings, all those callings, great and mighty, there is no doubt in the mind that the power of God was working according to what Moses and Aaron and God was doing. There was no doubt in anybody's mind that this was God. And yet, he turned it down over and over and over. And he got harder and harder and harder. All right, let's go to the 14, start at 19. 14 and 19 of Exodus. The angel of God, which went before the camp of Israel, removed and went behind them, and the pillar of the cloud went from before their face and stood behind them. And it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel, and it was a cloud and darkness to them, but it gave light by night to these, so that one came not near the other all the night. Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night, and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. Children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon the dry ground, and the waters were a wall unto them on the right hand and on the left. The Egyptians pursued and went in after them to the midst of the sea, even all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen. And it came to pass that in the morning watch, the Lord looked upon the host of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire, and of the cloud and troubled the host of the Egyptians. And they took off their chariot wheels so that they drave them heavily, so that the Egyptians said, let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fighteth for them against the Egyptians. And the Lord said to Moses, stretch forth thy hand. And Moses, Lord said to him, stretch forth thy hand over the sea, and that the waters may come again upon the Egyptians, upon their chariots and upon their horsemen. And Moses stretched forth his hand over the sea. Sea returned to its strength. And when the morning appeared, and the Egyptians fled against it, and the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea, and the waters returned and covered the chariots, the horsemen, all the host of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them, there remained not so much as one of them. But the children of Israel walked upon dry ground in the midst of the sea, and the waters were a wall unto them on the right hand and the left. The Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead upon the seashore. And Israel saw that great work which the Lord did upon the Egyptians. And the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. Now Pharaoh got to thinking he was a big and a powerful man, and I guess he was. But listen, folks, we're not anything compared to God. The most powerful man in the United States or in the whole world is nothing but putty in the hands of God. In him we live and move and have our being. We've got to have God's help, or you and I could drop dead at any second. And here's Pharaoh. All these miracles, and all God wanted to do was take the Israelites and get them out of Egypt and have their freedom. And Pharaoh said no. Every time, no, I'm not going to do that. God kept working and Pharaoh kept denying. He got harder and harder and harder. And then the end came. Tonight, how much preaching have you heard? How many times has God dealt with you? You do one of two things when you hear a gospel message and God's dealings. You either get softer or harder. And there are lots and lots of people that have walked out of our tabernacles and our houses of worship, so to speak, and they've hardened their heart because they refuse to do what God asked them to do. You say, well, I can't do that, Brother Carl. Bible said, my grace is sufficient. Paul said, I am what I am by the grace of God. Listen tonight, you and I can live for God. God will give you grace to do anything he asks you to do. He won't ask you to do anything above what he can do for you. And he will take you and use you and bless you and help you. And you can end up in heaven. But listen, folks, if you harden your heart and keep going out in sin, it's only going to get worse and worse. The depths of degradation. The depths of sin. There is no end to it at times. Some people end up maybe a kind of a mild life, but the bottom line is still it can go further. What does that song say? Sin can take you further than you ever thought you'd go or something like that. It can take you deeper and deeper, further and further, harder and harder. So maybe like the man that wrote 409, he didn't even want God mentioned in his funeral. He did allow that song, I believe, to be sung, but he didn't want God even mentioned. And God had blessed that man. He was a very, very powerful man at one time and very blessed man, but the devil got involved. Oh, tonight, I beg you, I plead with you, don't stand against the strivings of God. Humble your heart. Don't stand against it, but say, Lord, deal with me more. Call after me more. I love what you're doing, Lord. I love what you're saying. Please, Lord, I want to make heaven. I want to be saved. Let's stand. Let's have a number. I appreciate your time, attention, and your prayers tonight.